Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We're taking the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back at Alert. I have new dates for May and June at Pappas and State Fair and Costas. I'm wearing my Costas gear here, as well as Coco. So I put down new dates. I'm going to release them all when they're all confirmed. But we're getting back into the swing of things around here because I'm smelling the crab cakes and smelling the cold beer. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I'll have the Pac-Man scratch-offs to give away at Fadley's this Friday. We'll be there for the Arizona Diamondbacks taking on the Orioles. And the Orioles with a little bit of a weird, slow week this week with only games on Tuesday and Wednesday. Luke Jones joins us now. And, Luke, we're halfway through this homestand of the Washington Nationals and the Orioles and sort of the tepid nature of the whole rivalry of all of it. The fact that two equally horrific broadcasts were available to me on Masson 1 and Masson 2 on Tuesday evening. I would just say, look, this Costas gave me this before the City Connect happened, okay? And it doesn't have the little colors on the sleeve when they're making up stuff about neighborhoods and blah, you know, all of that, right? I said, blah. And that's not my Royal Farms coffee making me do that in my cold roofing mug. It's time to ditch the uniforms, and I know you agree with me.
Yeah, but try telling that to Major League Baseball and Nike. I mean, this is what it is. They're 5-9 since the City Connects were first worn last May, I guess it was. And
feels like they're 1-13, to be honest with you, but
yeah,
I got you.
Yeah. I mean, they haven't swung the bats very well. I think if you look at most of those games, it's been the offense not being very good. And we saw that again on Tuesday night. Corbin Burnes wasn't the best version of Corbin Burnes, but was certainly good enough.
Good enough to win.
Yeah, I mean, he gave up 3 runs over 6 1/3. It's not his best start, but it's good enough. But you managed 3 hits all night. I mean, it kind of is what it is. There's not a whole lot to say about this game.
Well, if you're winning 6-1 in the 7th, too, you probably go to the bullpen earlier, too. Probably. Right?
Or he's just pitching much differently, right? I mean, you're pitching a little more aggressively. You're not in a spot where, oh, we're down 1-0. I've got to be perfect here.
It was a morale killer when, you know, it went from 1-3 and yeah. And they were his 93rd and 4th and 5th and 6th pitches. And you're like, oh, man, you know, like this was a wasted effort on his part. That was a pretty damn good effort that he walks out and you're like, all right, you're going to lose tonight, probably. And I don't know. I don't know that I feel that way. I certainly felt that way Tuesday night. I didn't feel like they were a walk, a double, and a home run away from being right back in it. It didn't feel like close to me.
Yeah, I mean, it rarely does when you have a game you only score 3 hits or manage 3 hits and score 0 runs. But we've also seen this team have some games like that over the last couple of years where you would have said, it didn't feel like a game they were going to come back, and then boom, they come back in the 9th inning. So you never really know, but they just didn't swing the bats. And Trevor Williams, the starter for the Nats, give him some credit, but he's generally not a strikeout guy, and he racked up 8 over 5 innings. I mean, it felt like the Nats were doing the Orioles a favor when they pulled Trevor Williams. He hasn't been someone who's pitched particularly deep in the games. He's been right around 80 pitches this year if you kind of look at his game logs, but he kept them off balance. And, you know, the Orioles certainly talked a little bit about the umpiring after the game. You know, there were some examples of some bad calls, I thought, but that wasn't.
Well, the umpiring has really become an enormous, enormous focus in the modern era with little white boxes and reviews and John Boy and just, you know, all of it, right? Like, and on a night-by-night basis, I mean, Palmer and McDonald make it a referendum as pitchers, right?
They do, but it's every sport. I mean, my goodness. Listen to the average NFL fan talk about officiating. Listen to what you're hearing in the NBA with the 2-minute report and everything that's going on there and teams talking about the Knicks getting calls and all that. So it's all magnified because of technology, because of high definition, because of, yes, the need for officiating to be better and to evolve and to improve. And if you have technology, why not use it? But you only managed 3 hits. I mean, there's only so much complaining you can do. And the Orioles just didn't swing the bats. I mean, what, Adley Rutschman had a hit in the first inning, and they had 2 more after that the rest of the night. You barely mounted any threats. So difficult in that regard. Disappointing for Corbin Burnes, who, okay, rough finish to his outing, and he wasn't dominant when you look at the final line, but certainly was good enough to give them a chance to win. And it is interesting looking at it. The Orioles over Burns' first five starts of the year. You know, those five games, the Orioles scored 37 runs. They've scored 2 runs combined over his last three starts. So he's pitching into some tough luck here of late. And the Orioles lose a game. Look, they're going to lose some games here and there. I mean, they're 23-12. But as we noted a little bit earlier in the week, and I'll note once again, the New York Yankees still right there. You know, the Yankees have not lost since they lost 3 out of 4 to the Orioles. So it speaks to it not getting any easier. The rest of the AL East, Boston, Tampa Bay has suddenly, ironically, using their City Connect uniforms as a good luck charm. They've gone on a winning streak.
Well, theirs look good. You know, as opposed to
relatively speaking. Yeah, relatively speaking. I mean, I wouldn't say they look good. They look better than some other ones, at least. I mean, I just, the whole City Connect thing,
it's so dumb. You want to connect with your city, put your jersey on and connect with your city. The Yankees have never had a problem connecting with New York. It says New York on it. It says N and Y, and they're Yankee uniforms. You don't need anything else. The Tigers don't need anything other than a D. The Dodgers don't need anything other than L.A. after they left the B, but we're going back 75 years now, Branch Rickey, and you know, we can read about you know Jackie Robinson, and every year we hear about it. But like, dude, it's a pajama act. Yeah. It's gross. I mean, and the ketchup and relish uniforms that the NFL are putting on, the color rush and all that. Like, I love alternate uniforms. I'm a fashion tweak guy. By the way, I found, you're gonna appreciate this, not to change sports, I found the Derrick Henry Tennessee Oiler jersey available for $64.99. It says Henry on the back, 22. So I at least, but I love alternate jerseys. I love all, I love alternate caps. I love the orange pumpkin uniforms of the 71 Orioles. And, you know, and the orange, I have an orange alt jersey, and I don't even mind that they still wear Scott Erickson's garbage from Jerry Glanville's era on Friday nights, and they put the black on. God, that's cool, but what? How many more times are they going to bastardize the jersey? And this isn't about winning or losing. It's just about putting the game on, and the Nationals are running around in cherry blossoms. And I'm like, dude, you have Walgreens to start with. Bring the Senators pinstripes back and make yourself look credible. But they've had a bunch of jerseys, and they've been around 20 years. I mean, I don't know. I'm a Padres guy. Astros, they mess with jerseys and stuff. But at least keep it within the palette. That's all I'm asking from a – there's my fashion tweet after a 3-0 game. You don't want to talk about it anyway.
Yeah, I agree for the most part. I would actually – I think the Nats City Connect, again, on the City Connect scale, which is a extremely low bar, that's probably one of the better ones, in the sense that I hate the monochrome look. I hate the all these teams having black pants or dark navy blue pants or whatever it is. It just doesn't look baseball like, right? I know
in the Spear League softball.
I know that you can go back to the 70s and look at the Pirates. You mentioned the all orange that the Orioles wore very briefly in 1971, but baseball pants should generally speaking should be white or gray. I'll listen to a powder blue as a nice throwback, but I'll say this, in the Orioles a couple weeks ago, they actually wore their white home regular pants with the City Connect jerseys, you know, that Friday night game against the A's a couple weeks ago. I thought that looked better at the very least. I like the cap. I like the Orioles City Connect cap. With the script B, I don't mind that. I'd like it if it had orange rather than a white letter. But yeah, I mean, it's just most of these. And you mentioned the Tigers. The Tigers just came out with one. It looks lousy. We've talked about the Phillies. Theirs is lousy.
Dude, they couldn't even make the right jerseys with Nike so that these guys don't have their jock straps and their underwear, you know, showing through. Like, and they're made of paper mache, apparently, and everybody was bitching about them down in Sarasota. I it's just, how hard is this to get it right? You know, like, one of the things in the modern era that I will say is I own a jersey that I wore last Thursday. That's literally the same jersey, the acrylically like awful thing that I wore at Eastwood Little League in 1982. Thick, doesn't breathe. It's an old, it's 35 years old. It's Aparicio, it's orange. I don't know where the hell it's even from. It's majestic. That's how old it is. I don't, it's got to be from the 80s or 90s. It's 30 years old, and it can smell funky. It needs to be washed with the right stuff and like all of that. But I bought a jersey in San Diego on my Give a Spit tour, which, dude, how long we've been knowing each other, the 25th anniversary. It's 9 years ago that I did the baseball tour. I did 30 ballparks in 30 days. A lot of people don't even know I did it because it's been 9 years ago and we've created new listeners. But I went to 30 ballparks in 30 days. And I went into the gift shop in San Diego next to Petco downtown in the Gas Lamp. And I saw this beautiful Tony Gwynn jersey. And it was like $99 or something. It was like more than I wanted to pay, but less than, it wasn't 216. It wasn't crazy. And I picked it up, and it's the mustard 1984 road Padre jersey. And I picked it up, and it's got beautiful weight to it. And it's made of that Under Armoury new world thing, like where it breathes. I've worn that 100 degree days at Yankee Stadium. And I wear that as sort of, it's a Tony Gwynn jersey. There's never a bad, it's like a Jackie Robb. It's like a Eddie Murray or Cal. There's no bad day. It's like Mike Schmidt. There's no bad day to wear a Tony Gwynn jersey anywhere. I wear it and it's really comfortable. And I'm thinking to myself, they fixed it. You know, players don't have to sweat anymore. And I've had jerseys for 40 years. I'm a collector. I had an Aparicio 73 jersey that was pretty much this polyester awfulness that the one I wear currently is. And I think, man, you can make such comfortable things for players to wear and all of that. But why do they need to have 50 different styles? Why do people buy these? I see you and I go to Pittsburgh and we see those crazy jailbird striper jerseys, the bumblebee jerseys that they sold. People buy it. I guess that's the reason, but it's not appealing, and there's no familiarity when you put the game on and everybody's wearing their pajamas and they're bragging about it. And it's awful because an Oriole Nationals game, if you put classic jerseys on, do a throwback and wear 71 Senators and wear the orange pumpkin uniforms, and that would have a lot more appeal to me. I would be considering buying that.
Yeah, I mean, but again, I mean, you kind of said it, people buy them and they want to sell them. They want to have more merch to sell. I mean, it's just, it is what it is. And this kind of started, probably the genesis of this was Oregon college football. I mean, it really, and that was a while back. When you think about that's going back 20, 25 years, and you're seeing this in every sport. I mean, the NBA is the same way. It used to be in the NBA, what? You wore your white uniforms at home. You wore your colored on the road. That's not the case anymore. I mean,
hockey flipped too. Yeah. Hockey, when I was a kid, the Caps were white at home.
Right.
And the Rangers, everybody came in blue. And, you know, when the Oilers came in, they came. Then they flopped it. Well, the Capitals, they let Susan O'Malley destroy the brand and they started looking like the St. Louis Blues and they moved. And, you know, I mean, I went through that with Dave Preston, who, you know, is a fashion tweet guy this week, talking about DC sports and all that. But I just find it fascinating that they brag on these cities, that Baltimore and Washington don't get together much. The Orioles haven't been good much. Like, the Orioles and the Yankees look great when they look like the Orioles and the Yankees out on the field. So do the Red Sox and the Yankees. They look best. The Lakers and the Celtics look really good. You know when they look like the Lakers and the Celtics out there. When UCLA is playing Indiana and they're in basketball, they look good when they look like they're UCLA and Indiana. Like, I that's across the board for Notre Dame. That's across the board for any of them. I mean, Oregon, they don't have a real jersey. They've never had, I don't even know what their real one is. It's green and yellow, quacks like a duck, but they have no classic look because they've always stunk and they needed a gimmick like Eddie Goodell, like the friggin', what's it? The banana peels. What are they called? The banana soakers?
The Savannah, what you mean?
The bananas.
The Savannah bananas or whatever it is.
Yeah. You want to dress like the Savannah bananas, then put those cherry blossom things on in the monochrome gray, and you'll sell 20 of them to some, you know, hope-addled Nats fan. But like, if I were a Nationals fan, I'd wear Nationals gear. I'm an Orioles fan. I have orange. I have Oriole gear.
I think the litmus test should be, I said this to my brother-in-law a few years back. He's big in the NBA. But to me, the litmus test should be, if I turn on a game, assuming I follow the sport, assuming I know the sport, not talking about just someone who's watched two games in their life, but I turn it on, I should look at the two teams. I should not have to see a score bug at the bottom or top of the screen, and I should know which two teams they are. That to me should be the sign of what a uniform should bring as far as identity. And yeah, that's going away. I mean, in every sport, because you have so many alternates and so many different combinations. And I mean, now the NFL's embracing multiple helmets even. So look, there are younger people listening to this right now that love all that. And they're saying, man, these two old guys are yelling at a cloud right now. But
recognizing the team, yeah, it's called a
uniform. Brand recognition. Yeah,
Google
sure.
Uniform and sure. Like, it is what it is. I don't walk into Starbucks and they decide that they're going to go with pink and powder blue as their brand color. It's just not that's not the way traditionally things should be. But then again, they're not trying to sell more cups next month in 400 different colors. And they can do that if they wish as well and bastardize their brand. But they don't change the brand on the front of the building. And I feel like when you start doing this too often, you got pink bats and blue bats and this cancer awareness and that cancer awareness. We're going to do this for the military and we're going to do this for the city and we're going to do this for the state and we're going to do this for Jackie Robinson. And we're going to, like, dude, put on your jerseys. Yeah, just how about just white Orioles and white Baltimore? Hell, don't get me started. I mean, the Rubenstein's people aren't going to understand that I fought for 15 years with these creeps just to get Baltimore back on the jerseys and everything I see. We love you, Baltimore. We love you. Dude, I remember when they wouldn't answer the phone with Baltimore for a generation here. So, like, there's all sort of things that go into this. But back onto the field, pitching, hitting, catch. I don't worry about a little bit of a slump. But it is a weird week where they're not playing a lot of baseball. I'll say that. And for that, and then the homestand comes after this, and that'll all be good. And to your point, the Yankees aren't going away. You hear footsteps in a way that last year they were more of the stalker, not the stalked, and I think it's a little different for them. And on a night-by-night basis, here we go with the pitching. We're second time around for Bradish, second time around for Means. Is this real? You and I start to look ahead and say, All-star break. Are these really going to be our five starters? And is Rodriguez coming back week after next? And, then we're going to talk about Cole. We're going to have to talk about all of this stuff. But right now, it's just, let's keep getting good starts. I mean, I'm not down on the bats about Tuesday night, but like, it's a great start and they're stacking great starts. Good things are going to happen, especially with the way they do hit the ball.
No doubt. And they're going to swing the bats again. I mean, my goodness, we're talking, not when I say we, I don't mean you and me. I mean, just in general, we're talking about a loss, one loss. You know, they had just won, reeled off a really impressive week against the Yankees and the weekend against the Reds. So there's nothing to be concerned about on that front. I mean, a couple of items of business. Grayson Rodriguez is throwing. He talked to the media in DC prior to Tuesday's game, said he's feeling good. He said if it were up to him, he's not going to even go on a rehab assignment. Obviously, it's not up to him. And maybe the Orioles want to see him go on the mound at a minor league game for one time just to see how he responds. But sounds like he's throwing again. Sounds like this isn't an indefinite shutdown, anything like that. So in the meantime, how does Kyle Bradish look second time around? How does John Means look second time around? Is Cole Irvin going to continue to do this, which is be one of their absolute best pitchers as he's been over the last 3-4 weeks? So it's a good problem to have. But as we learned last week, when Rodriguez lands on the IL, it still all feels very fleeting. It still feels like it can go sideways. And that's the case for any team. That's not an Orioles thing. That's all 30 teams in Major League Baseball. So, dust yourself off after Tuesday night. You hope you swing the bats better. With Kyle Bradish going for his second time, they're facing a lefty in Mitchell Parker on Wednesday night. Swing the bats better, get Bradish an early lead, and get yourself a two-game split. So, I mean, there's not a whole lot else to say beyond that. I mean, got to score runs when you only manage three hits. I mean, it's a pretty simple narrative. I mean, we could talk about the City Connect as we just did. They're 5-9 in those, which is,
well, the Orioles have owned really the rivalry. If there is such a thing as a rivalry recent years.
Yeah.
It is fascinating too, because I am, while we're going to do the old guy get off my porch thing, this has been a week for me, and I'll get into the Sashi Brown thing later and people asking me everywhere I go if the Rubenstein people are going to give me credentials. And I'm like, I'm afraid to say something wrong because they, it's ridiculous. But through all of this, I watch it all on TV and I watch it from afar. And I went down and bought $15 beers last Thursday and sweat my ass off and had a good time heckling the Yankees folks. I'm going to be talking to Wendy Bronfein from Curio about that because she's the one who gave me the tickets. Watching the games and Masson and what Rubenstein knows right away, and he's doing the splash zone, and we can talk about that as well. I'd rather talk about my press credential, quite frankly, but the splash zone thing and the way he's connecting with fans, that's a whole thing. How bad the broadcast was on Tuesday, that's a whole thing. But it's everything. It's brand everything of he's now an owner wearing a tutu and goggles and soaking fans. He's never going to go back to being anything other than the fun guy, and he's already winning people just by not being John and Peter. And if I would have written him a note a month ago and pissed him off, I would have said, be anything you want. Just don't be Peter. You know, be anything but that. Now, that being said, whether, you know, everywhere I go, for me, it's, do you have your press pass? I don't know. And then for them, same thing. Every fan, it's, they better sign Rutschman. They better sign Henderson. You know, so like, I get all ends of how are you going to run it. And my questions, as I get locked out of a Sashi Brown seance here this week with the CEO club, my questions are about the greater good of the city and the $600 million that we all gave you, $600 million, and how that's going to get used to enhance all of this and make it more inclusive. I still look on television, and I'm always looking for people of color, Luke. And I know this bothers you, and, you know, like when we talk about it and whatnot, I count how many people of color come to these games on a consistent basis when they're pimping RBI and they're, you know, City Connect, which was ostensibly in some way to make themselves more ingratiated with the city, which means, oh, the city's like primarily people of color. Maybe we should connect with those folks and get them off of soccer pitches and into baseball, get them off of basketball courts and into baseball, like things we've been talking about for a million years. But the rivalry part of Baltimore and Washington, this is the old guy get off my porch part of this, is fascinating to me. And to see how bad the network is, and that's about to change, right? Broadcasters, when you say, I have a television network for my sport, what can we do to augment that? I have $600 million coming from the government to fix my house. I have great players, but we need to have more revenue here in every way. We need more skybox holders, more sponsors, more ticket sellers, more get rid of the upper deck. We need to have a bar. We need Cal Ripken and more Cal Ripken and more Cal Ripken. We need super soakers. We need an owner that touches fans. We need more people, more people, more people. Like, all of the things they have to be thinking about as he spent $1.7 billion and now is, 5 weeks in joking about it in a commercial about how much money he spent and that this is all he gets and it's as good as his bar mitzvah and he's going to go, and Friday night will be a party. It's cool. It's awesome. It's like, pinch me. Never could have convinced me back when the Ravens were playing the first playoff game and none of this was going down that this would be where we are Preakness week. By the way, they're running a horse race here next week that we're trying to save, that I'm talking about. I'm the only one. We've now saved it. We're building a racetrack in Baltimore. There's going to be two Preaknesses in Laurel. I'm trying to educate people in this baseball conversation because, like, people don't know any of this stuff. But the baseball part of this, as I watch it from afar, I think about the D.C. Baltimore thing being uncuffed for the first time in 20 years. We've never been able to think about it in any other – anytime these teams have played, there have been two broadcasts, two ways. Sometimes they jump in on each other's broadcast, and Johnny Holiday hangs out with Jim Palmer, which is cool. But the teams – one of the teams always stunk. There really is no rivalry. And I'd like to know what Mr. Rubenstein – because he took Cal out. He wants to get money for Baltimore, trying to get people in D.C. and in New York to invest here. I love all of this. I mean, every part of this is awesome to watch it unfold, but I don't have any access to ask questions, and he's only sitting down with people like Ryan Ripken, who now has landed Eric DaCosta, who ran from me on a veranda after 30 years of relationship the other night. It's an upside-down thing, but watching the potential of the baseball thing, when the owner gets it, you know what I mean? Like, gets it. He's in the outfield squirting people on Friday night. Luke, we're in a different time and place about all of this, and I'm seeing Masson's going to change. All of this is going to change, and this rivalry part of Baltimore. And the reason I don't go down to D.C. is it's a lousy experience down there. They're baseball. Other than the president's running around, there's nothing that would drag me to D.C. to see the Orioles play or to see the Dodgers, but see anybody play.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I've always found the Orioles Nats thing to just be very contrived at this point. If it ever develops into a rivalry, great. I mean, and let's face it. Has Ravens slash the team formerly known as the Redskins, did that ever really blossom? Not really. Maybe it will at some point. But when you're in different leagues, inherently, I mean, they play a 2-2 every year. I mean, it's you're not playing them 13 times like you play the Yankees or the Red Sox or the Rays in a year that the Rays are good. So, you know, I think there's only so much you can do on that front, and then you just have to see how it plays out. I mean, they were both good back in, what, 2012, and, you know, they played some decent games that were somewhat intense at the time. But were they remembered? You know, did it spark a legit?
Well, I'm sure they made a massive classic in the John Angelos era.
Right. And look, I mean, you can have some one-off series here and there, but I mean, you can't force rivalries. I mean, you just can't. Yeah. I mean, let's face it. I mean, Ravens early on, there were thoughts that it was going to be the Steelers. It was really the Titans in those early years. And then it became the Steelers. And now Ravens Steelers is kind of this legacy rivalry, but it's not. Hasn't been red hot in a few years, you know, more than a few years probably. So, you know, as far as that part of the conversation, but going back to Rubenstein and where they are ownership wise and him reaching people, and you see stories on social media of him interacting with fans, buying fans a drink. You know, that was something on opening day that the ownership group did over across the street from the ballpark. And, you know, all of those things, which look, those are not going to be the things that ultimately define this ownership group and what kind of stewards they are. But within the context of the first 5 or 6 weeks of owning the ball club, knowing that you're not going to fix Masson overnight, knowing that you're not going to break down or break ground on renovations in May because you
and
have
realizing
a,
you're right. You're not signing Gunnar Henderson either.
And you're not doing that immediately.
Boros doesn't
right.
like
Well, if you do, it's not necessarily going to come on your timeline. It's going to come on his timeline, right? I mean, if you manage to do it, it's going to be something that's going to take some time. It's probably not going to be something that's done the first 5 weeks you've owned the ball club. So all of those big picture questions are so relevant, so critical, so important to the future of the ball club and its ability to thrive here in Baltimore. But in the meantime, those little things like the commercials that will make someone laugh, like being, you know, Mr. Splash for a Friday night game, like walking around and interacting and shaking hands and kissing babies and all those different things. To your point that Peter Angelos and John Angelos never did with any level of success or authenticity. Those are good things. Those things do help. Those are the kind of things.
I love that you use that
I mean,
word.
It needs to be organic.
Because you know why? Sashi Brown's locking me out of a CEO speech this week. And that's the thing he lacks is authenticity. And he is an outsider. He will always be an outsider for treating people like me like garbage. I pulled up the Cat Williams tweet and said, if you want me to say better things about you, treat me better. How about that? How about you treat me like a human being instead of somebody that doesn't have to drink from the outside fountain after all the years of doing this? And I'll let the 25th anniversary documentary stand as what my son said, spiking the ball on the work that I've done and what we stand for, what you stand for, what I stand for, what my brand stands for. I've never wavered from any of that. But the authenticity part of it is you only really get one chance to earn that kind of credibility, right? You only get you can be authentic until you're a phony, until your toupee falls off and you find out that like that's not who you are, or you know the emperor has no clothes, or you have these defining moments like shouting at Dan Connolly and telling him you're going to open the books, or you know, or the defining moments for me with the Angelos family, which were lies upon lies and getting assaulted by the Oriole bird and not having a bill paid, just all of these defining things that I could report back and people would believe because I have authenticity because I've been here from the beginning. So the beginning for David Rubenstein was January 21st, he's this guy. He's out on Twitter. He's a billionaire. You know, the authenticity is, okay, opening day, what are we going to do? He is writing his own next chapter, right? Like just like he said he would 6 weeks ago. And, you know, part of that authenticity is he's getting a chance to study the book of Peter Angelos and do things differently. And that needed to be done. He doesn't need to go squirt the fans in the outfield for me to like him. You know, but I really would like to see a vision here, a greater vision than TJ Brightman and Greg Bader and Jennifer Grandal standing in front of me and my press credential and saying, we do that on behalf of Mr. Angelos. Like there's going to have to come some tectonic plate shifting, and there will on television, on broadcasters, on
who
he is and what his intentions are. But the authenticity of going out, to your point, authenticity, that's something, you know, he's earning that by being, as Charlie Ekman would say, and he'll appreciate this if he hears it, a right guy. You know,
yeah,
that's all you want.
And when I say authenticity, it's perception, right? I mean, I don't know David Rubenstein from Adam, right? I'm seeing what everyone else is seeing. You know, I saw him for one press conference where, you know, it was kind of botched, and he only took three or four questions at the very end because they ran out of time. But everything we are seeing to this point suggests that this guy does care about the Orioles. Now, do I think that he necessarily has been following the Orioles so closely that he could have told you their top 10 prospects 2 years ago? Probably not. But when he goes on the Masson telecast and he's talking to Jim Palmer and he's sharing stories about Luis Aparicio or Gus Triandis, who even preceded Palmer, it speaks to, okay, this is a guy who likes baseball. Now, that doesn't mean he knows every single stat and every single aspect of modern baseball in 2024. But again, there's an authenticity that comes across that it looks like you're sincere. It looks like you're having fun with this. It looks like you want to be a good steward. And these little things right now that are still just little things in the big picture, because if 5 years from now, if their window is shut and these young players are leaving left and right and your payroll's still in the bottom third of baseball and it looks like the talent is drying up and Masson's still a mess and you haven't done things to cultivate business relationships, then shaking hands and squirting fans with super soakers in left center field, that's not going to go as far. That's not going to carry the same clout that it does right now. So it's a honeymoon period. And I don't say that to be disparaging of it. It's good. It's fun. You know, the commercials of, you know, hokey or not, it's been fun.
Dude, as I told his communications guy, I am the reason, I am the guy who was waiting for you people. I have been begging for this change. Please make it a positive one. Please be better than that guy. You know, in every way. In a media way, in a fan way, in a spending way, in an intentional way, in a spiritual way, in an authenticity way, in a kindness way, in a community-oriented way, in a way that's not contrived. And I will say this, the first thing I see are these sort of weird Saturday Night Live kind of commercials, and I'm wondering who's writing them. You know what I mean? My first question is, all right, he's a billionaire. He can get anybody to hire. Did he call the ESPN people that did the ESPN, you know, Sports Center? Like, literally, these are scripted commercials. And they're coming to him and saying, I think, I don't know, David, here's five ideas. One is you and Cal going out the shortstop. The other is you putting on the beer hat and drinking from the, I don't really want to do that one. Okay, well, would you want to do the super soaker? No, tell me about that one. Like, I can't imagine that meeting with Greg Bader or TJ Brightman, like not just that meeting with John Angelos or Peter, he's dead. Forget about him. Just how this happens, that these commercials happen and that they roll this out. To me, as an entrepreneur, as somebody who studied this, as somebody who studied how badly it was done, as somebody who studied the other owner, the football owner, coming into my house to pee one night, me letting him in, and then running from me on a veranda 4 weeks ago in the shadows of darkness, I'm interested in his story. And I'll say this out loud to you, because I know you know this. I would do homework on him, right? Like, he's on Bloomberg. There's a million YouTube things. You can go watch him talk about money with different people. He's now done an hour with Cal Ripken last week. He's done Ryan Ripken. He did the little press conference. He did the in the booth on opening day, which I still haven't watched him even say Aparicio's name to see if he pronounces it right. Because a lot of people said Aparicio, and Anyway, but either way, I haven't heard him speak. I've been purposely, because I thought I would have met him by now. You know what I mean? I thought, like, okay, you know, like, they let you in, why wouldn't they let me in? It doesn't make any sense, especially on nights when you can't be there and our seat sits empty. And the reason for that, for anybody listening, it's the same people are running the place. So the aforementioned Greg Bader team. So I get that question, and every day I'm getting that question. So I have to bring it up. But for me, the notion that he's going to go squirt people and be out in front of this, it says to me that, like Peter once said to me, he's going to be a very available individual. And the concern I would have, and I don't know who's given him advice or whether he's got any advice or whether this was his idea. Like he said, that looks like fun. Let me go. I don't know. I really don't. I'd like to know. But it feels a little more handled, to your point. It feels a little bit more like storyboard in the way that everything in the Ravens is now contrived when I go to Ravens.com. So much of they have outtakes when Sam Cook walks into a shot. They do a cut on it and they recut things for their television. So I see it all happening with under the Hard Knocks umbrella. That's a part of the vision of the brand that Michelle Andres has on the football side that we see come to life as to what they and Chad Steele, what they think their brand is on their channel. The Orioles, once the owner's out with goggles on squirting people, like I ran through the streets in my underwear 30 years ago, famously, it's part of the video. I wonder what the next step is. You know what I mean? And I wonder where his ego is on feeling like he has to be the anti-Peter and whether this is a one-trick pony, he'll do this once and go back to being a normal owner and like all that, or whether he's going to be more Charlie Finley, Bill Veeck, more out in front of it. Peter was out in front of it early. I mean, I was here and reported. Peter gave everybody his home phone number and took calls from, like, he did all of that. Once you start doing things like, this is a pretty drastic thing, the squirting it. I mean, it's one thing to walk around every night and sign autographs. Cal Ripken did that every night for a year and a half back during the streak, which was unique and cool and awesome. I just don't know what the next thing is and where his intentions are. And that's why I want to meet him. And that's why I haven't watched any of these videos to see him being handled before he sits down and what he's going to say, because I am fascinated by all of this from the outside. I mean, it's juicier to me that I've been locked out and I don't know anything and I haven't watched anything, because when I actually meet him, and I hope to meet him and we talk about Louis Aparicio or whatever, I don't want to judge him based on a press conference with Cal Ripken in a suit where he's saying everything the right way. That's not the David Rubenstein I want to know. So like, I'm really trying hard to not see any of that until I meet him, but I'm watching all of it. And it is fascinating from a Madison Avenue standpoint of, you spent $1.7 billion on the team. How are you going to manage it? Who is your Kevin Byrne? Who's your consigliere? Who are you going to listen to? Why are you squirting people in the out? Because it's fun. Great. You're a billionaire. Do whatever you want. That's the one thing he's going to find out that I'm going to write about, is when you're him, everyone there is going to agree to anything that's your idea, because they're all trying to keep their jobs.
Yeah, that's fair. And as we said, it's a honeymoon period and the team's playing right around 667 ball. So things are good. People are happy. People are enjoying the baseball experience and they have a new owner. And there's that sense of hope, regardless of how anything's going to play out.
You have, know, you it's been different. Drawn to it's every new. Word he said? Have you watched any of his speeches to try to understand more about him? Because I'm purposely not. I'm admitting that for the first time, because I thought I would have met him by now. I really did. I am disappointed I haven't met him, but not. I mean, I'm cool. I got time. I've been waiting 18 years.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's still a TBD. I mean, as we talked about for years, in terms of what, if there was going to be new ownership, what challenges they would face, what questions need to be addressed, you know, what areas of the organization need to be improved. You know, those are some major undertakings, regardless of how successful it's looking on the field right now. Those are important.
This is heavy
issues.
Lifting. So trying to get people downtown to spend full price, buy beers, become customers, come back often, buy a little Oriole bird in the gift shop. Like, they're asking
for money. They're going to need this money. And that's where it started for me. And that's where it would start with Mr. Rubenstein, as much as I love the brand. I love the city. I love the team. I've loved the team through all the hatred and all the terribleness, and I've gotten on planes and flew to Arlington. Like I love the team. You know, I am the mark, as the wrestling folks would say. But the kayfabe thing, I don't know. I can't play. I'm not good at playing kayfabe, which is why Sashi Brown locks me out. I'm not the kayfabe guy. I'm the shoot interview guy, because I'm the journalist guy, and you're the guy taking the $600 million. So, and you're the guy in charge. It says so on the front. You're the guy with the funny hat squirting everybody. You're the owner. I want to see him front up. I want to see my press credential back. I want to see him answer questions. I want to see more accountability than, quite frankly, I see on the other side.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. Like I said, I mean, a lot of this, we're 5-6 weeks into it. A lot of these questions that will need to be answered, and projects that will need to be started, and different things that need to change for the better, that's going to take some time. I mean, it is. I mean, ballpark renovations, masks, and all of that, it's going to take time, one, to develop the proper vision, two, to execute it. So in the meantime, the things that he is doing to interact with fans and put his face out there, it's good. It's good. I'm not going to sit here and say otherwise.
I remember when Lenny Moore gave a speech one night after his boy died. He came out to Ed Block and he gave a speech that brought down the house. And if anybody's ever seen him, I think he's given the speech before about growing up poor and not having anything. His parents taught him that kindness doesn't cost you a penny. It doesn't cost anything. This guy's a billionaire. He's out squirting the fans, giving them what they want. Which is a much more touch experience than what we've had here the last 30 years. So I commend him. I mean, I really do. I mean, I just wonder what's next. And I wonder, I'm asking the why, how the commercials are getting done. I would ask Cal Ripken the same. I would ask John Maroon the same. I would ask him all the same question. Like, what's the philosophical thing that's happened at the core here? The 60 minutes sit down of, you bought the team, you decided to buy the team. What's the first thing that went through your mind about Peter and about fixing it? Because obviously this is sort of the anti-Peter, which is all that in a bag of donuts for a guy like me. You know, it's all I've ever asked for. And it's fun watching the fans enjoy hope. Really.
Yeah. I mean, it's a heck of a baseball team, best in the American League right now. And look, off the field, there's more hope than there's been in a long time. We're going to see how that plays out. We're going to see how it unfolds over the next couple of years. But it's a great, as I've said over and over, going back to last year, it truly is a great time to be an Orioles fan, because the potential is there across the board for this thing to be so much better than it's been in a really, really long time.
Luke Jones will be watching the games all weekend long. He'll be with me at Fadley's on Friday, 2 until 5. We will be giving away the Pac-Man scratch-offs in the Maryland Lottery. Big thanks to our friends at Liberty Pure Solutions, keeping our water clean, as well as Jiffy Lube Multi-Care. We'll be telling you more about that. I'm plotting this Oyster Tour. We've done the 25th anniversary documentary. Lots of folks feeding back to me on that. If you watched it, appreciate it. And, you know, the one thing, Mac over at the Convention Center said that there was a bunch of manure about me that he had no idea about. So go learn, go laugh, go cry, feedback, do it all. It's at Baltimore Positive. We're going to be around all week long. Get ready for the other part of the Derby next week, the part where the Derby winner comes here. We have the Preakness next week. So we've talked about the Preakness Stakes all next week as well. We have an election this week. I have word out to several electeds and candidates. They may be appearing here a little later on in the week as well. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking Baltimore positive.